courage is the ability to accept responsibility even when you know that it's going to cost you. It's not about not being fearful. It's about operating despite the fear.
When you push past your own barriers and inhibitions and fears and hesitations, that's working that same muscle. I think you could say that courage is a muscle that the more that you work it, the better it's going to respond when you need it.
There are daily opportunities to be courageous.
Hello and welcome back to the Be Unbound podcast, where we discuss practical Christian living, how to build thriving communities, and how to be extraordinary at the ordinary. I'm your co-host, David Rethemeyer.
And I'm your co-host, Jonathan Brush.
And we're following up on last week's episode, where we were continuing to talk about some of the sub-themes of Apex. If you've been listening to the podcast for a bit recently, you've most likely heard in our student segments, we've been featuring some of the fantastic students who are part of our student cabinet who are planning Apex and have been working so hard to make it happen. And so we thought that to go along with that, we would talk a little bit about some of the sub-themes. And so we just recently talked about identity and responsibility, and we wanted to talk this week about courage. And Jonathan, we were talking about some stories of courage beforehand, and you talked about one that where you were able to demonstrate courage very early in your marriage against a threat to your home. So please tell us about this.
Yeah, this is a very courageous story, David. So I had been not married particularly long. I guess we've been married 2 years, and we had a little one that just had a 1 year birthday, and we had had the birthday party, and we were upstairs. We were in a 2-bedroom apartment that was like a 2-story. Downstairs like a living room, kitchen. Upstairs 2 bedrooms, and in the middle of the night, my wife wakes me up and she said, "I think there's somebody downstairs." And being the courageous and understanding husband that I am, I said, "Well, I don't think so. Go back to sleep." I was like, "Absolutely not." And she's like, "No, I think I can hear something moving. And maybe I heard something moving too. I'm not sure." So I was like, "Okay." So I go down and I start to walk down the steps. And the stairs were like closed in like halfway down. So you had to get like halfway down the steps before you could see in the living room. And as I got to that point where you could see into the living room, a face and a person moved across like in the living room, like sort of parallel with me with the door. And so I went from like, "There's nothing down here," to, "We have somebody in our house." And so I tucked and I rolled down the stairs and I landed on the bottom and I bounced up and I bounced off the front door that was at the bottom of the steps, and I'm facing the living room and I'm all ready for whatever comes next. And I was absolutely ready to kick the tail of the helium smiley face balloon that was slowly floating across the living room at that time. And so what had happened was the balloon was on the ceiling and had been out in the kitchen breakfast nook area, and the air conditioning had come on and it was bouncing across the ceiling. And so the bouncing was the tapping that we'd heard. And when that thing had, the vent had just come on and it just floated past the stairway there. And so I came back upstairs and as calmly as I could informed Kara that it was fine. It was just a balloon. And so she smiled and went to sleep. And I stayed awake for the rest of the night with my heart pounding and adrenaline flowing through my system, staring up at the ceiling, both terrified and David, secretly pleased, because I kept thinking, well, I went down. I didn't go up. I went down towards it. I didn't go up, even if it was a smiley face balloon. So.
Jonathan, in this particular case, I'm just glad that you didn't take more extreme measures and decide that you needed to arm yourself and then commit balloon homicide in a very violent manner.
Pop the balloon. Yeah, I was armed with my own 2 fists, which is enough to intimidate not even a helium balloon. So.
And that just would have been very unfortunate, because that would have, depending on what you used to defend yourself, that could have caused some damage to your apartment that would have been very embarrassing to explain to your landlord.
Probably legally difficult, too. So.
Right. Exactly. We're also talking, the example that I thought of in terms of courage was a few years ago, decided to tackle with several of my friends a Tough Mudder race, which, if you're not familiar with it, is basically just a gigantic gigantic adult obstacle course that specializes in things being very muddy and messy the entire way through. And so it's very hard, but it's good fun. And there's a lot of teamwork aspects to it as well. But one of the more well-known obstacles that is on the course is that there is a set of barbed wire, or not barbed wire, but basically like cattle fence wire that is strung across a pool of water that's probably about like 20, 25 feet long. And the obstacle is you have to army crawl underneath, like through this like pool of muddy water. You have to army crawl underneath the electrified wire. And if you get up too high, then you will end up getting shocked. And it is
that's very interesting
sickly
little
painful.
Yeah, that's a little extra point, but you just said cattle wire. You didn't necessarily specify. So not just cattle wire, electric fence wire. I live in the country, David, so like I'm familiar with, there's just over the hill right there, there's an electric fence that one of the first things our children learn is don't touch the fence. So you've got electric cattle wire that is hot, as we say in the country. It's got juice going through it.
Oh, yeah, very much so. And now, for the people who are particularly not courageous, technically, in the Tough Mudder, you can skip obstacles. That's kind of the difference between a Tough Mudder and a Spartan race. In a Spartan race, you get disqualified or you have to like run a bunch of laps if you want to try to skip an obstacle, if you fail an obstacle. The Tough Mudder, you don't get penalized for that. So there are people who will skip those. But what I noticed is that for the people who decided they wanted to do it anyway, there was a very big difference between the people who were scared out of their minds and were trying to go through anyway, versus the people who like kept a level head. Because the people who were scared out of their minds, they had a lot of tension. They were very scared of what would happen if they ended up getting shocked. And when your body tenses up, Jonathan, you end up, your muscles kind of contract. You end up, sitting a little bit higher, and your movements are a little bit more jerky, which makes it a lot easier for you to accidentally raise yourself a little bit too high and get shocked by an electrified cattle wire. Whereas the people who just were able to keep a level head and focus on keeping as low as possible, I saw several people actually make it through and not get shocked at all. Unfortunately for me, I wasn't able to keep quite that level of a head.
That was the question. I was like, okay, so
yeah.
First of all, let's just be clear. You didn't pansy out and go around the obstacle. So you
I did
the
not.
Okay,
I did go through it, and it hurt quite a bit. I didn't fare quite as badly as some people. There were a couple of friends who I saw who legitimately like they got shocked on the top of their head and like they blacked out for a second, which was not a fun experience. I got shocked in some also uncomfortable places, but I was able to recover from that, thankfully. And
are you saying that you didn't sit very well on the way home, David? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it was definitely, I was not sitting pretty, that's for sure. So it was a fun experience, but,
it sounds like everybody wants to do on a weekend.
Listen, so. Even if it wasn't necessarily fun going through it, it was very fun watching my friends go through it.
Yeah, everybody's
and then coming out on the other side and
understanding,
saying, well, that was awful, wasn't it?
That's why David runs marathons, because they're easier, and marathons don't have cattle fences that shock you. So, yeah.
That's true. It's an entirely different kind of fun.
We should do a podcast on what David's definition of fun is, but instead we're doing a podcast about courage and this question, which is, what does courage look like in everyday life? For me, it's being able to confront homicidal smiley face helium balloons. And for David, it's being relaxed enough to get your tail down as you go through the hard parts of life. And we're tempted to wrap it up right there. So I think this question of what does courage look like in everyday life, that everyday life thing is important, because I think courage is one of these words that gets immediately associated, rightly so, with the extreme acts of courage, with the Medal of Honor type courage, mm-hmm. with the martyrdom type courage. And certainly it is absolutely that. And so taking nothing away from those things at all. But one of the dangers of that, of course, is that if that's our example of courage, most of us say, well, I don't know that I'll ever be called upon to be courageous in that way. And mm-hmm. yet, I think we would argue here that what does courage look like in everyday life? First of all, everyday life requires courage, and and that there are daily opportunities to be courageous. And as we talked about this sort of, you know, unofficial series we've been doing, as we've talked through some of these themes from Apex that the cabinet has set, I would like to start with this premise, David, and see what you think about that. Let's think about this, which is courage is, in everyday life, means starting with accepting your identity that was given to you, that you were made in the image of God, and being responsible and accepting responsibility for what God has placed in your life. And I think that both of those things require a level of courage that you have to practice and exhibit every day.
Okay. Let's kind of tease this out a little bit. So I think to back up slightly, we should kind of narrow in a little bit on, you know, you say that, you know, taking responsibility and like accepting your identity, that requires courage. But what actually is courage? You know, we talked a little bit about, you know, what, you know, people who have courage or what courage ends up looking like, but what actually is it?
So I'll be interested in your opinion on this as well, but I've always thought of courage as the ability to do what needs to be done despite obstacles and despite fear, which is kind of an extreme act of responsibility. Right. To accept. And this is why I kind of tied it back there, to accept responsibility for whatever's in front of you. I accepted responsibility for the invading hot air balloon. You accepted responsibility for getting through the obstacle. And then you don't really want to go through the obstacle. At some level, David, I'm sure there's a part of you that's like, just go around this thing. It's not a Spartan
There was
race.
A very large part of me that did not want to do that.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm thinking there's some claustrophobia involved between mud that chokes you at the bottom, and right? And so and yet there's a desire to set aside that somewhat rational thought and say, no, there's something bigger here that's worth striving for. Being able to say I complete the stuff mutter, and to be able to focus on that bigger thing, that bigger goal, that more important outcome, even at paying the cost to get there, and paying that cost ranges from getting zapped to, in extreme cases of courage, you know, losing your livelihood, losing your life, perhaps being injured. Yeah, I mean, like there's that we can set some extreme costs here. But I think courage is the ability to accept responsibility, even when you know that it's going to cost you.
Yeah, I like that. I think the way that I would phrase it, which is a little bit different than yours, but I think still complements what we're trying to get at here, is I think most people, when they think of courage, is the ability to push past fear. And to be able to do something that they know is an important thing to do. And I think that is true, but I also think that courage is just being the ability to do what is right even when you don't feel like it, period. Whether that feeling is because of fear, if it's because of laziness, if it's because of doubt in your own mind of whether or not like you will be able to do it. There's a lot of different obstacles that can get in the way of doing what you know is the right thing to do in a particular moment. And I think the definition I would put forward is that courage is the ability to say, yes, that is scary. Or yes, I feel lazy and I don't feel like doing this. Or yes, like I don't know for sure that I'm going to be able to do this, but I'm going to try anyway. And I'm going to push past that and give it my all.
Yeah, I think that works well. I think that overcoming fear is sort of the maybe more popular definition. And that's right. It's almost, but overcoming fear implies that we're not fearful. And I know that's not what you were saying, but there is an important aspect here of that. It's not about not being fearful. It's about operating despite the fear. I think of there is something supremely satisfying and emboldening and character building in facing something that you know is going to make you afraid, being afraid and doing it anyway. And so I don't know, were you scared of the obstacle in the Tough Mudder course?
I was scared of getting hurt. Yeah. Did not like the idea of getting shocked by live cattle wire.
And yet there's something about you had to push yourself. And so I'm kind of curious, how high above the mud is this thing?
It's not very high. Like, you're having to keep your head down pretty close. Like, I would guess there's probably only like 15 inches or so of room between like the bottom, like the base of the mud and the wire.
And so some of that's got mud up to your chin, right, as well, right? So
exactly. You're kind of,
yeah. So did you have to turn your head sideways, or it was like, yeah, had your head up?
Kind of, but you also were at the same time trying to avoid, they were really mean about it. They also had some like strands that were hanging down almost into the water. And so you had to be like, kind of keep your head up so that you could dodge between those and, you know, avoid hitting other people. So kind of had to keep your head like a little bit tilted, but at the same time you had to be able to see through there, which I couldn't take my glasses in there. So it was a whole thing.
Yeah. So yeah, there's that kind of, you come up to it and you're like, and then there's this interesting, I don't have to do this.
Right.
And so I think this is where the everyday stuff comes in, because at some level, when we talk about extreme acts of courage, you say, well, somebody has to save that child. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, like that. And that's true. You don't have to do it. And yet the result is different. Everyday courage might be slightly different. Well, I said that sort of opaquely. So let me go back to that. When you're in this like extreme act of courage, I don't know, David, did you see the news recently about the lifeguard that saved the kid? I think it was on the California coast. There's some pretty wild footage. 16-year-old lifeguard went out and saved a kid, and it was pretty extreme rescue, all captured in video, of course, because the day we're in. And so you can say, you know, that lifeguard didn't have to do it, but you'd also say, but the kid would drown if he didn't. And so that outcome is a pretty forceful outcome, right? And so that doesn't take anything away from the courage of the 16-year-old who went out and rescued that boy. But at the same time, you also know that's his job, and the terror, the horror of him not responding is much bigger.
Right.
Everyday courage might be a little different. And I'm just kind of teasing with this a little bit, where you didn't have to go through the tough mudder thing.
No.
And yet you did. And so is that everyday courage? I think it is, because I think, and here's the part that I'm sort of pushing towards, that process of being afraid and doing it anyway, And knowing I don't have to do this, but yet there's something more important. And that's what I wanted to press into. Why, David? So why you don't have to do it? At some level, we could just get really practical here and say, that's absolutely stupid. I mean, like, why would you? Is. I mean, you didn't have to sign up for the race. You didn't have to go through this particular thing. You didn't have to risk blacking out in the mud. I mean, I don't know that this is like the most life-threatening thing you've ever done, but there's some element of danger here that's real. Right. And so why did you do it? What was the motivation for that?
Well, as we mentioned previously, I have a very interesting sense of fun, for one thing. But the other reason,
because you're weird.
I mean, that's part of it. That's definitely part of it. I won't
deny that.
But
there's something bigger here. So
there is, and there was a large part of it that I think, for one thing, was because I wanted to experience it together with my friends. I was doing it alongside of other people, and so I wanted to, because we were all tackling it together, we could all see how hard and awful that was going to be, but we all wanted to do it together, and so I wanted to make sure that I joined in that camaraderie. But then I think like the reason that we were all doing it together is because we saw that this was something that was going to be really challenging and was going to take a lot of fortitude and, was going to take like courage to be able to push our way through. And the satisfaction and just like the resilience that comes from looking at something that is going to be very challenging and not pleasant and pushing through it and doing it anyway was a reward that we had all decided that was going to be worth it for us and we wanted to do.
Yeah, I think that secondary reason, you know, because we could joke around here and say, well, peer pressure. So David's weird and peer pressure. Those are the first two things he noticed.
I mean, hey, both of those things are very, very valid reasons.
They're powerful things. But yet there's a different, there's a third reason here, which is this looks hard and we want to test ourselves against hard things. Mm-hmm. Which is I sort of paraphrase that, but there's a desire to test and to see, will we exhibit courage? Will we press through? And I think that idea is really important, because I think in everyday courage, we get this opportunity to face things that we don't have to do. David didn't have to go through this obstacle. We didn't have to sign up for the Tough Mudder. And yet, there's a different outcome to life of people who choose to be courageous by consistently putting themselves in places where they're challenged and they do things they don't have to do. And there's a collectivism to that in the sense that those things add up, that the sum is greater than the whole of its parts here, in that there's a couple aspects here. One, there's the training aspect, but two, there's just the cultivating of this idea that we should press to be more, to do more. And tying it back to what I said earlier, I think there's two things there. One, at some level, you have to believe I'm made in the image of God and these things are possible. And there's an abundance mindset, a stretching of I'm made in the image of the Creator God. That's bigger than I can imagine. There's more that I'm capable of than I'm currently doing. And the second is, I want to be a kind of person who accepts responsibility. And so I'm going to accept more responsibility. I'm going to respond to other things. I'm going to choose things that test my response. And that that courage is, the everyday courage, is consistently leaning into that, of pressing and saying, what more does this identity offer? And also, what more things can I respond to? And how might that look? And what does that do? And that ultimately, making those decisions again and again and again and again, choosing to do a Tough Mudder, choosing to do the hard thing, choosing to get the work done instead of relaxing, choosing to, you know, in your case, David, choosing to go run when you don't feel like it, that those things add up and give you the ability to do things like, I completed a Tough Mudder, I ran a marathon. But I think in bigger ways, David, puts you in a position that when things are really important, when the kid in the surf needs rescued, you don't have to think about it. You say, yeah, I can go. I've already run these reps, mm-hmm. and I've done enough of the everyday courage that the big courageous act is not a decision point. It's a natural outcome of the way I've been living my life and the discipline that I put in my life all the time.
Right. Well, and two, I think it helps that, you know, we're talking a lot about physical things here, but I think then it allows you to tackle mental challenges and, you know, mental courage that doesn't necessarily look like, you know, putting your bodily self at risk, but could put you just at, you know, emotional risk. And so, you know, for, you know, example, for like young people, just the ability to have the courage to ask somebody out on a date, or you know, to ask for a promotion or a raise at your job, or to have an uncomfortable conversation with a friend or a coworker about some sort of conflict that needs to be resolved. The more that you're able to push past that discomfort as well, and I think the physical and the, you know, the mental complement each other as well. When you're able to push past more of the physical barriers, that enables you to better push past the mental barriers, and vice versa. I think in some ways, even though they are, you know, the physical and mental are separate, they're, when you push past your own barriers and inhibitions and fears and hesitations, that's working that same muscle. I think in some ways you could call, I think you could say that courage is a muscle, that the more that you work it, the better it's going to respond when you need it.
Well, I think that that's a really important point. We have a I don't know that we have, I don't want to include Dave in this. I have a little saying that I've talked about before, which is, I think that there's an inextricable link between physical hardship and mental fortitude. Mm-hmm. And that mental fortitude is what ultimately we have to rely on to resist sin and temptation in our life. And I think that we often find ourselves in situations where we're asking young people to resist colossal temptation and sin that is placed in front of them by a huge machine that seeks their destruction. And then we're surprised when they succumb to it, when we've never really given them any opportunity to train against that. And my little saying for that is that we continually send our young people to fight orcs naked, and then we're surprised when they get defeated. In other words, that we don't equip them at all. And so everyday courage at some level is to live your life in such a way that you're constantly being tested with hardship and hard decisions. And that can be mental and physical. But that when you do things like crawl through a pit of mud and risk getting shocked, that builds up the mental fortitude that allows you to choose the thing that is not the most immediately satisfying or gratifying, which is to say, to resist temptation. Whether that temptation is that extra sugar and piece of candy that you know is not going to help your training plan, or whether that temptation is to say no to the pornography machine that comes after you and say, I'm going to choose something different. That starts with the everyday courage of doing hard things in a variety of other places, both small and large, that collectively then give you the fortitude to be able to resist the bigger problems when life throws them at you.
And I think one of the most important pieces that we can add on to this, which I think longtime listeners will see this coming, is building that in community is going to be one of the best ways to do that. Because if you're able to acknowledge that I don't have the courage to be able to tackle this as of right now, and I feel very inadequate in trying to summon the courage is really challenging right now, if you're able to talk with someone else and acknowledge that, especially if it's someone else who has been through situations like this before and is able to, potentially either give you some guidance or if nothing else, just say, I know that that's scary. I've been there and I want to be here for you as you tackle it so that you can pursue that courage that you're going to need to tackle that. It gets a heck of a lot easier when you have somebody else who you know is in your corner. And even though you're ultimately the one who's responsible for your own courage, having other people in your corner who are encouraging you is really, really valuable when you're trying to develop that.
To be able to see courage in everyday life and those around you absolutely creates a response of you wanting to act the same way. And so, which brings us back to the peer pressure stuff that David talked about earlier.
Exactly.
You got a group of crazy people that are going to crawl through mud. You want to go do that with them. So.
Senior year of high school can be one of the most overwhelming and stressful years in a young adult's life. But it doesn't have to be. That's why we created Explore, a program for homeschool seniors that's designed to give them essential skills, experience, and support they need to graduate with confidence. Explore is a coaching program that comes alongside whatever curriculum you're already using and reinforces it with real-world skills courses, helping students learn things like time management, note-taking, and Christian worldview. They can also earn up to 9 college credits through CLEP exams. Explore students also get to attend Apex, Unbound's biggest live student event, where they'll get to meet their coaches and the rest of the Explore students in their class. Throughout the year, they'll deepen connections with those fellow students, get one-on-one coaching from our team, and complete projects related to things they're interested in to help them take all the concepts they've learned and apply them in the real world. If you want to learn more, visit beunbound.us/explore.
All right, Jonathan, the last couple of episodes, we've talked about technology that frustrates us to no end. And I do think that it was therapeutic for us to get that out of our systems. But we decided that we wanted to take a little bit more of a positive tone for the next couple of wild cards. And so, Jonathan, what do you feel like is the most useful or helpful gift that someone has given to you?
Honestly, this is interesting. You know, you get Christmas gifts and you get birthday gifts and sometimes you buy things. And I'm always curious to look back and say, like, what thing has actually been useful to me the most? And that's a very easy answer for me. And I wish I could remember the exact year, but I know that it was a long time ago. I feel like it was probably 20 years ago at minimum. My two oldest children, with obviously the help of my wife in terms of their age at that time, bought me a heavy-duty, full-grain leather belt. I think it was from a place called Bison Leather. I'm not even sure if they're in business anymore. And they gave it to me. And David, here's the crazy thing. I am pretty sure that I have worn this belt every single day of my life since then. There may be a few exceptions when I was at the beach and had swimsuits on most of the time. I don't know, because even when I'm at the beach, I often go for a walk and I'm wearing shorts that I put my belt on. So if I didn't wear it on a certain day in my life, it would be very unusual. It is heavy grain leather. It's pretty much in the same condition it was when they gave it to me. And because it's heavy grain leather, it can be polished and it can be, treated. And so I can literally wear it with a pair. It's not like you wouldn't wear it with a suit, but I can polish it up and wear it with a pair of khakis to church. And then I've worn it backpacking and I've worn it canoeing and I'll wear it when I'm running the chainsaw. And I'm wearing it right now. And I can guarantee you I've worn it in every single episode that we've ever recorded of this. And so it is hands down the most useful gift that I've ever been given.
Wow. That is fantastic. There is just something to be said for a nice handcrafted, piece of, just work or just art, really, for some of the leather workers that is going to last forever. So I'm a little jealous. I'll have to see if they're still in operation.
Yeah, I should look too and send you the link. But I don't need to buy one because this one's still going strong. So.
Well, hey, if nothing else, you could potentially see if we could get some referral bonuses or something.
That's right.
And for this week's student feature, we are rounding out our coverage of APEX and the Unbound National Student Cabinet, who have been planning APEX, with last but not least, Silas. Thank you so much for joining me this week.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. So, Silas, tell me a little bit about what your specific role has been on the cabinet this year.
Yeah, so had different roles. You know, everybody's doing a bunch of different things. One of my main roles early on throughout the year was being the team executive for storytelling meetings. So that's going to be like all of our marketing emails, our merch that we'll be doing at APEX, and a lot of other things. But being the executive is just making sure everything's going smoothly, everyone's on track with everything. So helping to make sure emails are getting written in time so that they're being able to send out at the right time. Ellie's helping out with that and making sure everything's going well, but as the student leader for that marketing team. And so that was one of my main roles that only went throughout like half the year. Once we had all of our merch and stuff finalized, we didn't need to do those meetings anymore. And we could do most of the rest of the stuff on Slack that needed answers. I was also on team activities team, which was super duper fun, getting to plan all of the afternoon activities that will be at APEX. Also on welcome party team, so making sure students really feel engaged and involved when they arrive at APEX. This is kind of their first experience for year one students or people just coming to APEX. And so you really want people to feel engaged and feel welcomed, and then also a welcome party in the evening, as well as I was also on the Mission Impossible, or Impossible Mission, as we're calling it, which is kind of like a capture the flag, but we did a ton with that. I was on it with Tyus, Brayden, and Olivia was helping out as the staff member. So we took capture the flag and what we had played at other Apexes and redesigned it, rewrote a bunch of rules for it. There's also a bunch of codes and ciphers. And so we had to write and design all of those ciphers. So it's almost like a giant capture the flag, treasure hunt kind of thing. But that's been super fun to learn, to just be on like meetings with other teams, taking leadership roles for that storytelling meeting, learning just like the Google ecosystem. That was something I wasn't super familiar with, but just like Drive, because you need it to be organized on Cabinet or else it's not going to work. So a lot of people on the team had more experience than I did, but it was really fun just getting to work with them, learn from them. And yeah, it's really cool. Just like how it all works and is put together.
Yeah. Wow. You were involved in a lot of different aspects of it. And I also happen to know for a fact that you guys have been and it sounds like are continuing to do a little bit of video work and are coming up with some videos to promote for APEX and also to play during APEX. And so I know that you're pretty heavily involved in that, too.
Yeah. One thing that we started this year that hadn't been done before was starting a cabinet Instagram, just because we want Apex is for young adults, and a lot of young adults are on social media. And so just knowing our audience, we were like, how can we reach more people? And someone suggested that we start an Instagram page. And that has been really fun to work with and interact with others through that, of just like, yeah, sharing more about what Apex is through that. Also, we are planning to do a opening video for Apex. And so, yeah, planning that. We also planned a little teaser trailer to get people excited for Apex that we shot at Capstone. Crazy story, because it was getting, we knew we were all going to be at Capstone together. And so we were like, well, let's make some kind of teaser trailer like they did last year for Apex Shift. So we wrote a script, wrote everything out. I had kind of had a storyboard idea for a video that I wanted to do at some point. And it was just like, well, we've got a group of people. We're all together at Capstone. And so stayed up super late shooting that one night. Tama helped a ton. And then, yeah, I was the sole editor for that. Lost a lot of sleep over it. But I think it turned out really well, and I think everybody was excited to see it.
That's cool. Yeah. So you've been involved in a lot of different aspects of this. And so, yeah, just as we are currently just leading up to the event, it's going to be coming up next week as of the time we're recording this. Yeah, I'm just curious, like you've kind of reached through the home stretch here. What do you feel like for you personally have been like the biggest things that you have learned through your time on Cabinet?
Yeah, it's been really growing experience and really fun. Just working with a team. And for me, things I've learned are just like listening to others' ideas, especially at the cabinet retreat, which was in January. And I knew everybody that was on cabinet, but did not know them well. And so listening to everyone's ideas and always just pushing back in a loving way of being like, okay, let's listen to all the ideas, get them all out there, and then we can go through all of them and break them down. And if we have questions, we can do that. So being able to listen to everybody's ideas, even if I'm like, hey, I don't think that's going to work, but just listen to them and then ask follow-up questions to dig deeper into what their thoughts are, making sure everybody's on the same page. And then also humbling myself and be able to take criticism for and have people push back on my ideas, put something out there, even if it's something wild, just put it out there because it might turn into something that you guys actually like end up using, which is pretty cool. But I have to humble myself and be able to take that criticism or questions that people are asking so that we all are on the same page. And yeah, I think also with that is just like communication. You have to be communicating with the team or it's not going to work. If I have an idea, but I don't share it, nobody's going to know that idea and it's not going to take off. So like I was saying, like, even if you don't think it's going to work, just put it out there. Lots of communication over Slack because we're all across the country. And so being able to know Slack, have your notifications on so that you get it. And if you get tagged, try to respond to it as quickly as possible because we are all like super busy and we all have jobs. And it's like, oh, my lunch breaks right now. I've got an hour to work on cabinet stuff. Let me get that out now. So if I send you a message and you're able to respond, like being able to do that has just been super good to work on stuff. And yeah, especially towards like now and towards coming up till Apex, we've had a lot more meetings that aren't like scheduled meetings, but it's like, hey, I'm working on stuff. Do you guys want to jump on a call right now? We can work on stuff together. And that's also been super helpful. So for me, I would just say like listening to other people's ideas and also just communication.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been super cool to talk with just all the different members of your team and hear just how you guys have all kind of banded together to make this happen. That's really cool. Yeah. So, all right. Well, as we are just about here to Apex, Silas, what a part of the event are you personally most excited for?
I am most excited about the impossible mission. that has been super fun to plan. I'm really excited to see how it goes because it could be a complete disaster. We've never tested it or anything. But I know we've put a ton of work into it, and I don't think that's going to happen. So I'm excited to see how all the teams will. We've given them the rules a few weeks early, and so they've already been able to start reading them, get a game plan, start strategies. So I'm really excited to see how teams will work together, and also just the strategies that each of them bring.
Oh, that is going to be very fun to watch. One of my favorite parts of Apex every year for the capture of the flag is just walking around the camp and just seeing what the different teams are doing and strategizing and what all is happening around different parts of the camp. It is highly entertaining.
Absolutely.
So that's going to be fun. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Silas, for telling us a little bit about your experience. And we are really excited to see how the event shapes up.
Thank you, David.
All right, David, what does courage look like in everyday life? I think it's just constantly doing the hard things, but it's not just doing the hard things, it's seeking out the hard things. And that's the part that I don't know that we, you know, as we bring this to a conclusion, just to be more plain about, at some level, courage in everyday life looks like seeking challenges.
Mm-hmm.
Just to put yourself in a position where you're saying, I'm only going to grow when I have to strive. Striving is hard and it requires some level of suffering and pain. and if I'm the kind of person that can put myself in a position where I'm always doing a little bit of that, that collectively builds endurance in some really special ways that allows me to do far more than I could have without that.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think if we're going to get practical for recommending things for listeners is that I think that it's an excellent practice to look for something that you can implement in your everyday life that makes you uncomfortable, that pushes you to do something that you are, you know, not naturally necessarily inclined to do, that is going to be uncomfortable in some fashion, whether that's, you know, doing something very physical, like going for workouts. We have a podcast from the beginning of the year where I would highly recommend going for a run because I think that's one of the best ways to do that. But that can look like a bunch of different things physically, or it could be something mentally where, for example, I think, one practice could be journaling or something like that, where that's not necessarily going to be a natural or comfortable process at first, but it's a discipline that if you take the time to develop it can be extremely helpful. And so I think that there's a lot of different ways that you can seek out things that are uncomfortable to make a part of your daily life and that can really just jumpstart your ability to develop that courage muscle that we've talked about.
So until next time, keep your tail down and be unbound.